middle of the road. He's trying to find me. I'm standing in the middle of life with my pants behind me. I got a smile for everyone I meet. As long as you don't try dragging my bay or dropping the bomb on my street. Get in the road. Come on now. In the middle of the road, yeah. In the middle of the road, we see the darndest things. Like fat guys driving round in jeeps through the city, wearing big diamond rings and silk suits. There's corrugated tin shacks full of cancer, man, I don't mean a Hampstead nursery. When you own a big chunk of the bloody third world, the babies just come with the scenery. Now come on, baby. Get in the road. Come on now. In the middle of the road, yeah.
You can contact James live on the air several different ways. You can call by phone, toll free in the United States and Canada at 888-863-2722. If you have internet access, point your browser to www.feettofire.com. That's www.feet2fire.com. And check the left of the screen for the How to Participate text and click. You can then choose Direct Chat with James or join the official group chat room. You can send email to James at f2f@innersights.com. That's f2f@innersites.com. There is a video chat room to see James in action, as well as other F2F listeners. www.ivisit.com has the free software to download and access the Feet to Fire video chat room. And now, live from Chicago, here is the Black Knight of Talk Radio, James Arthur Yancic.
Get in the road. Come on now. In the middle of the road, yeah.
All right, here's another half hour that's going to zip on by us, so I'm going to get right to it. Lionel Parkinson has been on here several times. He is a document examiner who has dealt with looking at the writings of the Bible from a document examiner and has come up with some inconsistencies, which he has traced to the altering of those writings when Israel was captive by Babylon and then reintroduced within the Christian context by Rome up by the 3rd century. And he's been on to talk about his book, The Holy Virus, and so on. And we have a mailing address you can set up, because he's on once a month to answer questions about that, as well as other things he's found. And it's Lionel, Lionel, at innersights.com, and it gets privately forwarded to him to address those issues in particular. You find his book, holyvirus.net, is the place for the book and a bunch of other stuff there. His point tonight, and welcome to the show, Lionel. Your point, as I've capsulized it, is that you're going to tie in the current monetary practices and systems of law that actually are passed down from Babylon and will lead to worldwide serfdom.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
All right, so it's about 25 minutes or so, and I want to just kind of step out of the way here, maybe toss in here now and again to let you let out this information so people can, you know, listen to it over and over again, and we can perhaps expound upon it in a later date. But this seems to be corroborate some of the other things that I've noticed, that we do have kind of a worldwide Babylonian system reemerging.
Yeah, not only is it emerging, but it really never left. It's always been here. Mm-hmm. It's at times it's always been knocked down or reduced to a certain degree, but it is now accelerating at a pace where it could actually lead us right back into a worser dark age type scenario that I'm very concerned about it, because I'm seeing in this country the same practices, not only in our jurisprudence and American law, but it's all based on the contract system that existed in ancient Babylonian practices and codes. A lot of people don't realize that Babylon actually, everything in Babylon worked on the law of contracts. And if you want, I can just kind of get started. Go right into it. As far as now, my own personal research in looking through law books and dealing with a lot of time in law libraries, I wrote down a lot of key points, but I've noticed that there was a gentleman back in 1922 that did a lot of work on this. And if anybody wants to check out his findings, it was a gentleman by the name of Guy Carleton from Johns Hopkins University. And he wrote a segment called Historical Jurisprudence. And again, this was in 1922. And I'd like to combine some of my notes with his, but his starts out by stating, "The law of Babylonia has had an immense effect upon that of nearly all the countries of Europe. The literature of Babylon has perished, but the element of culture which has endured was greater than the literature. That element is law, an organized, intelligible system of rights and duties enforced by the state. The work of the nation was the production of a system of law necessary to the extended commercial activity of the city. The complex Babylonian civilization, which produced a commercial law in advance of any other ancient system. Now, in Babylon, the custom of document evidence is found in almost all transactions. This was connected with contractual oaths, the very thing that Jesus talked about in Matthew chapter 5, verse 34. He did not like, in fact, he commanded that there'd be no oaths to be taken whatsoever, irregardless of what pastors try and say about affirming an oath. But the issue behind the oaths was this: in Babylon, the contracting parties were obliged in their contracts to swear by the principal god of the country, and that they would abide by the conditions of that contract. In other words, in our American jurisprudence, at the end of most contracts, if not all of them, we have a little segment called Under Penalty of Perjury, where a person thinks that if they're not telling the truth, they're under oath, if they're not telling the truth, that is what that statement is making, is under penalty of perjury. But what it really comes down to is that you're taking an oath under a venue, under a particular belief system or god of the state or of the nation, and that is what the courts are looking at. They're trying to grab people outside that have a, if they even believe in a God-given birthright, that they are under God, by going into these contracts and signing them, and especially under oath, you're entering into a venue that God cannot enter into. I know that sounds really strange, but this is how the system is used even today. But in the days of Babylon, they would bind people's minds to the contracts through their conscience by trying to make them uphold their end of the contract under the god that they believed in. In American jurisprudence, they still use any kind of belief system that is under the state. The state literally becomes the god.
Now, let me get this right, though. It seems to be innocent at top to simply affirm your truthness by, say, swearing an oath to your God. But it seems like that they're doing this so that if they can get you in a contract, which they have misleadingly misled you, and you swore to it by your God, then you have to follow it by your swearing, regardless of perhaps the intention of the other side of the contract.
Yeah, it's a complicated issue, but the ancient Babylonian priests were involved these contracts were deemed to be a form of oath, and they entered into it by the contracting parties and the approval of their gods were invoked so as to more effectively legitimize or bamboozle the entire process in the minds and the consciences of the contracting parties. They wanted to incorporate people's belief system into the contract in such a way that it made it hard for the conscience to break the contract. But what was really taking place here is a lot of Christians today, they know about Matthew chapter 5, verse 34. They're not supposed to take contractual oaths. And they're right, you know, if they're going to follow what, you know, Christ commanded. But you can't enter into commerce in the United States without taking these oaths. You can't become a U.S. citizen. You cannot get a job. You cannot buy a home. You can't. In other words, everything that the United States is based upon is this old Babylonian practice. And in my research, I find not just similarities in between the Babylonian commercial code laws, but they also match up perfectly with the laws that exist in this country today. In fact, in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, as this gravitated from Babylon, Rome adopted it at all. But in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, in 1868, it states this: the whole of equity jurisprudence prevailing in England and the United States is mainly based on the Roman civil law. That statement is telling me that everything that we're doing is based on what Rome adopted from Babylon. And this is very important, that our laws are really not based on Christ or the commandments of Christ. They are very much entrenched with this old Babylonian system that never really went away. It just hung around, and evil men have always adopted it. And the way you can determine this is by the nature of the men that embrace this particular system of law. For instance, Mayor Rothschild said this: permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws. Enforced unemployment and hunger imposed on the masses because of the power we have to create shortages of food, we create the right of capital to rule more surely than the original government.
What you're saying, though, is this whole concept of contract rules all may sound okay at the surface, because if you're telling the truth and you're honest, well, why not swear? Because, you know, but there's an ensnarement. There's something that's planned behind it that really, because on the surface you figure, well, you know, what's wrong with a contract? But apparently the contract being more important than the morality that may come up within the contract is the issue.
Yeah, this goes a lot deeper than just being honest on a piece of paper. The insidious laws behind it is the one thing that I'm trying to convey to others, that these are not just innocent pieces of paper that we're signing every day. These are confession entrapment forms that go directly to the courts, whether they're...
Well, actually, a great example of that would be the signing your tax return.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the mother of all ones, because we've already seen many times there really isn't a law granting that tax. And by quote, voluntarily paying it, you're also signing a statement, which then is what actually convicts you. When you lie in your taxes, that's what you get convicted for, not paying your taxes.
Exactly. Yeah. If and they have laws built in that if a person doesn't fill out a confession form,
I like that phrase.
And it really is. At the end of all these contracts, you'll always find at the point where you're going to so-called sign your name, your so-called Christian name, or whatever belief system you might have, you'll always find the words "to the best of your knowledge" or "understand." These are two key words that Jesus used. And what knowledge is, it's the recognition of the existence of the higher power that is built into that contract. In this case, what we sign is pretty much the state or the United States or whatever. It's all of these entities, of course, we know are fictions. They're created by men. They're specifically designed to get you out from underneath your God-given birthright, which is given to you through the commandments of Jesus, which is very difficult to incorporate in a jurisprudence system that totally leaves them out of all the contracts. And I've always been against this, but I noticed from the birth certificate to the marriage certificate, everything is, people are literally signing their whole life throughout the course of their life under the state. And the churches are will not deal with this issue because they know it's wrong deep down inside, but they don't know what to do about it. They keep on claiming a separation of church and state, but listen, a contract is still a contract. If it's going to be an honest contract, you should have the right to be able to decide what is in that contract and how you want it drawn up, not just for one side to draw it up and then throw it at you and say, okay, you can't enter our world of commerce unless you sign it under our conditions and make make your whole life under our particular hidden God or constitution. So this is the one thing that I don't like. I don't mind if people want to live under the state. That's their choice. But if a person wants to live their life under God, they should be given that choice also. They should not be forced or coerced to sign something they normally would not sign under normal circumstances.
Well, there's no room left on the planet that anybody can go do that because every ounce, every inch of land belongs to somebody, and that person has set up their own rules. So I guess we're kind of sunk.
Yes. Now, there is now showing that there is a connection from more than just a connection between Babylon. This commercial law code goes through Rome, and it goes into England and the United States, and here we are today. However, the one thing about contracts, and when I used to testify in court, and my testimony was always the most important in the court to determine whether or not documents were tampered with, or whether you're dealing with genuine authors or not. I've always noticed that there is a loophole in contracts, and that loophole is, again, that word, those two words, and they're very, very important, knowledge and understand. These are two words that they have to abide by even under their Babylonian system. You have to fully understand everything that you sign. If you do not, that contract really is not valid. It is no longer something that can be used against you. You can't deny that you signed it, but you can deny that you understood everything that you signed. Now, knowing this, having this particular kind of knowledge does allow you to get out from underneath it. That doesn't solve the problem as far as I would like to be able to wake up all the churches and say, listen, let's take a look at what you're signing here. Are you really living your life under God, or are you living your life under a false God? Because that's exactly what's going on. Now, if they want to, you know, wait for Jesus one day to rapture them, I guess that's fine, but that doesn't deal with the now. And the problem is they're signing not only their life, their property, and liberty over, but they're signing their children over as well. It's an insidious system that is in place right now, and it's moving now in the banking realm where it is now failing, and all this debt under the two terms that I've done some research of collateralized debt obligations and credit default swaps, these areas are getting so large that when people get trapped under these contracts and this debt is pounded down on them through socialized mechanisms, they become liable for it whether they sign the contract or not. And this is really insidious because we're dealing with, you know, under credit defaults swap market since mid-2007, a $45 trillion mess that's going to hit this country, you know, like a train wreck. And keeping in mind that the stock market is a $22 trillion market and falling, and a $7 trillion mortgage market, and a $4 trillion treasury market, we've got everything coming down really fast. You're going to hear a lot of banks failing here, and they're all going to do one thing. They're going to run to the one entity that created this mess that I believe established this whole Babylonian commercial code in this country, and that is the Federal Reserve. They're going to go to these people because all this money, of course, is fictionalized in a digital monetary system. And they're going to go ahead and play a game. Like they'll do some kind of bridge loan to these banks and take some of this debt. But the Fed is not interested in taking this debt upon themselves. They're going to pass it on and socialize it among all the U.S. citizens, and this is where I'm speculating, I can't prove this, but I do know the nature of this game, and it's very insidious. Their intention is to bury everyone in debt in this country that falls under these contracts, and that is why I wanted to at least talk about it on this program.
And, well, we could see that the fictionalized money is bailing out all of these things so that the mortgage companies, which technically own everything, I mean, you may own your house, but as soon as you don't pay for it, you no longer really own it. I mean, you never really own it. And then after you're done, the taxes, again, you don't pay your taxes, you lose your house. But anyway, it seems like the Federal Reserve is now going to own property. I mean, a lot of it, because by bailing out these institutions, the Federal Reserve goes beyond making banknotes, it now owns property.
Yeah, and they got it all for free.
with fake money.
Yeah, and they can easily pass that debt now onto the and socialize it. And this, I suspect that that's and that this is this section that we're talking about is some subprime market and some of the regular market. Even with people with good jobs that can even make payments on their homes, they don't want to sit in a home that's losing 20% of value each and every year. So a lot of them are just deciding to walk away from it. This is starting to be a very scary situation because now these banks are sitting on a lot of properties that they don't know what to do with. And there's nobody coming in with a lot of cash to bail them out. They have to go to the Federal Reserve, and this whole credit default swap situation and collateral debt obligations. I should explain what these are just really quickly. A credit default swap is sort of an insurance, like contracts that promise to cover losses on certain securities in an event of a default. They typically apply to municipal bonds and corporate debt and mortgage securities and are sold by banks and hedge funds and others I can't think of right now. But the buyer of the credit default insurance pays premiums over a period of time in return for a peace of mind, knowing that losses will be covered if a default happens. The problem with this whole credit default swap area is it's unregulated. These things have been traded 15, 20 times among investors on both ends. Nobody knows what's going on. It's a total, complete system. And I noticed in 1999, the Federal Reserve wanted to get Congress to exempt them from any prosecution if these highly derivative instruments ever blow up. So they've already covered themselves on the legal end not to be prosecuted on this.
Well, we're going to have to, we're out of time now. We're going to have back to go into this kind of stuff because this only scratches the surface, but I'm glad we got it out there, and we will be, we'll set something up. Well, thanks, Lionel. We'll be back right after this.